When the women were gone, Teg pulled himself up onto one of the chairs and looked into the empty room visible beyond the seawall. It had been close there, and he still felt his heart pumping hard from the effort. "Quite a show," he said. "I've seen better. Extremely dry. What I'd like right now is a large glass of Marinette, but I doubt this body could take it." "Belle will be waiting for Dar when she gets back to Central," Idaho said. "To the nethermost hell with Belle. We have to defuse those honored maters before they find us. And our Bashar has just the plan. Damn that title!" Idaho inhaled a sharp breath, restricted by shock. "Tell you something, Duncan." Intense. "Once when I was arriving for an important meeting with potential enemies, I heard an aide announce me. The Bashar is here." I damn near stumbled, caught by the abstraction.
"Mentat Blur."
"Of course it was. But I knew the title removed me from something I did not dare lose. Bashar? I was more than that. I was Miles Teg, the name given me by my parents."
"You were on the name chain."
"Certainly. And I realized my name stood at a distance from something more primal. Miles Teg? No, I was more basic than that. I could hear my mother saying, 'Oh, what a beautiful baby.' So there I was with another name. Beautiful baby."
"Did you go deeper?"
Idaho found himself fascinated. "I was caught. Name leads to name, leads to name, leads to nameless. When I walked into that important room, I was nameless. Did you ever risk that?"
"Once." A reluctant admission.
"We all do it at least once. But there I was. I'd been briefed. I had a reference for everyone at that table. Face, name, title, plus all of the backgrounding."
"But you weren't really there."
"Oh, I could see the expectant faces measuring me, wondering, worrying. But they did not know me."
"That gave you a feeling of great power?"
"Exactly as we were warned in Mentat school. I asked myself, is this mind at its beginning? Don't laugh. It's a tantalizing question."
"So you went deeper."
Caught by Teg's words, Idaho ignored tugs of warning at the edge of his awareness. "Oh, yes. And I found myself in the famous Hall of Mirrors they described and warned us to flee."
"So you remembered how to get out and..."
"Remembered? You've obviously been there. Did memory get you out?"
"It helped."
"Despite the warnings, I lingered, seeing my self of selves and infinite permutations. Reflections of reflections ad infinitum.
Fascination of the ego core.
Damn few ever escaped from that depth. You were lucky."
"I'm not sure it should be called luck. I knew there must be a first awareness, an awakening."
"Which discovers it is not the first. But I wanted a self at the root of the self. Didn't the people at this meeting notice anything odd about you?"
"I found out later. I sat down with a wooden expression that concealed these mental gymnastics.
You didn't speak. I was struck dumb. That was interpreted as the Bashar's expected reticence. So much for reputation."
Idaho started to smile and remembered the Komais. He saw at once how the watchdogs would interpret such revelations. Wild talent and a dangerous descendant of the Atreides. Sisters knew about the mirrors. Anyone who escaped must be suspect. What did the mirror show him?
As though he heard the dangerous question, Teg said, "I was caught and knew it. I could visualize myself as a bedridden vegetable, but I didn't care. The mirrors were everything until, like something floating up out of the water, I saw my mother. She looked more or less the way she had just before she died."
Idaho inhaled a trembling breath.
Didn't Teg know what he had just said for the Komais to record?
"The sisters will now imagine I'm at least a potential Quetzalcoatl," Teg said.
"Another Moabdib.
Bullcrap, as you're so fond of saying, Duncan. Neither of us would risk that. We know what he created, and we're not stupid. Idaho could not swallow. Would they accept Tegg's words? He spoke the truth, but still... She took my hand, Tegg said. I could feel it. And she led me right out of the hall. I expected her to be with me when I felt myself seated at the table. My hand still tingled from her touch, but she was gone. I knew that. I just brought myself to attention and took over. The sisterhood had important advantages to gain there, and I gained them. Something your mother planted in... No. I saw her the same way Reverend Mothers see other memory. It was her way of saying, "What the hell are you wasting time here when there's work to do?" She has never left me, Duncan. The past never leaves any of us. Idaho abruptly saw the purpose behind Tegg's recital. Honesty and candor indeed. You have other memory.
No,
except what anyone has in emergencies. The Hall of Mirrors was an emergency, and it also let me see and feel the source of help, but I'm not going back there. Idaho accepted this. Most Mentats risked one dip into infinity and learned the transient nature of names and titles. But Tegg's account was much more than a statement about time as flow and tableau. I figured it was time we introduced ourselves fully to the Bene Gesserit, Tegg said. They should know how far they can trust us. There's work to do, and we've wasted enough time on stupidities. Spend energies on those who make you strong. Energy spent on weaklings drags you to doom. H.M. Rule. Bene Gesserit commentary? Who judges? The Dortweiler record. The day of Dortweiler's return did not go well for Odrade. A weapons conference with Tegg and Idaho ended without decision. She had sensed the hunter's axe all during the meeting, and knew this colored her reactions. Then the afternoon session with Mirbella. Words, words, words. Mirbella was tangled in questions of philosophy. A dead end, if Odrade had ever encountered one. Now she stood in the early evening at the westernmost edge of Central's perimeter paving. It was one of her favorite places, but Belanda beside her deprived Odrade of the anticipated quiet enjoyment. Shiana found them there and asked, "Is it true you have given Rebella the freedom of the ship?" "There." This was one of Belanda's deepest fears. "Bell," Odrade cut her off, and pointed at the ring orchards. "That little rise over there, where we've built no trees. I want you to order a folly in that place, built to my requirements. A gazebo with lattice framing for the views." No stopping Belanda now. Odrade had seldom seen her this incensed. And the more Belanda ranted, the more adamant Odrade became. "You want a folly? In that orchard? What else will you waste our substance on?" "Folly? A most appropriate label for another of your..." It was a silly argument. Both of them knew it 20 words into the thing. Mother Superior could not unbend first, and Bell seldom unbent for anything. Even when Odrade fell silent, Belanda charged onward into empty ramparts. At the end, when Belanda ran out of energy, Odrade said, "You owe me a fine dinner, Belle. See that it's the best you can arrange." "Oh, you..." Belanda started to splutter. "A peace offering," Odrade said. "I want it served in my gazebo. My fancy folly." When Shiana laughed, Belanda was forced to join, but with an icy edge. She knew when she had been outfaced. "Everyone will see it and say, 'See how confident Mother Superior is,'" Shiana said. "So you want it for morale?" At this point, Belanda would have accepted almost any justification. Odrade beamed at Shiana. "My clever little darling." Not only had Shiana ceased teasing Belanda, she had taken to reinforcing the older woman's self-esteem wherever possible. Belle knew it, of course, and there remained an inevitable Bene Gesserit question. Why? Recognizing the suspicion, Shiana said, "We're really arguing about Miles and Duncan, and I, for one, am sick of it."
"If I just knew what you were really doing, Dar," Balanda said.
"Energy has its own patterns, Bell."
"What do you mean?"
Quite startled. "They are going to find us, Bell, and I know how." Balanda actually gaped. "We are slaves of our habits," Odred said. "Slaves of energies we create. Can slaves break free? Bell, you know the problem as well as I do." For once, Balanda was nonplussed. Odred stared at her. Pride. That was what Odred saw when she looked at her sisters and their places. Dignity was only a mask, no real humility. Instead, there was this visible conformity, a true Bene Gesserit pattern that, in a society aware of the peril in patterns, sounded a warning klaxon. Shiana was confused. Habits. "Your habits always come hunting after you. The self you construct will haunt you, a ghost wandering around in search of your body, eager to possess you. You are addicted to the self we construct, slaves to what we have done. We are addicted to honored maters, and they to us."
"More of your damned romanticism," Balanda said.
"Yes, I'm a romantic, in the same way the tyrant was. He sensitized himself to the fixed shape of his creation. I am sensitive to his prescient trap.
But oh, how close the hunter, and oh, how deep the pit."
Balanda was not placated.
"You said you know how they will find us."
"They have only to recognize their own habits. And they..." "Yes." This was to an acolyte messenger emerging from a covered passage behind Balanda.
"Mother Superior. It's Reverend Mother Dortuila. Mother Fintel has brought her to the landing flat, and they will be here within the hour."
"Bring her to my workroom."
Odred looked at Balanda with a stare that was almost wild.
"Has she said anything?"
"Mother Dortuila is ill," the acolyte said.
"Ill. What an extraordinary thing to say about a reverend mother."
"Reserve judgment."
It was Balanda Mentat speaking. Balanda, foe of romanticism and wild imagination.
"Get Tam up there as an observer," Odred said.
Dortuila hobbled in on a cane with Fintel and Stregi helping her. There was a firmness to Dortuila's eyes, though, and a sense of measuring behind every look she focused on her surroundings. She had her hood thrown back, revealing hair the dark, mottled brown of antique ivory, and when she spoke, her voice conveyed a sense of fatigue.
"I have done as you ordered, Mother Superior."
As Fintel and Stregi left the room, Dortuila sat without being invited, a sling chair beside Balanda. Brief glances at Shiana and Tamerlane on her left, then a hard stare at Odred.
"They will meet with you on Junction. They think the place is their own idea. And your Spider Queen is there."
"How soon?" Shiana asked.
"They want 100 standard days, counting from just about now. I can be more precise if you want."
"Why so long?" Odred asked.
"My opinion? They will use the time to reinforce their defenses on Junction."
"What guarantees?"
That was Tam, terse as usual.
"Dortuila, what has happened to you?"
Odred was shocked by the trembling weakness apparent in the woman.
"They conducted experiments on me. But that is not important. The arrangements are. For what it's worth, they promise you safe passage in and out of Junction. Don't believe it. You are allowed a small entourage of servants, no more than 5. Assume they will kill everyone who accompanies you, although I may have taught them the error in that."
"They expect me to bring submission of the Bene Gesserit?"
Odred's voice had never been colder. Dortuila's words raised a specter of tragedy.
"That was the inducement,"
The sisters who went with you? Shiana asked. Dortwyler tapped her forehead, a common sisterhood gesture. I have them. We agree the Honored Maters should be punished. Dead? Odraid forced the word between tight lips. Attempting to force me into their ranks. You see, we will kill another if you don't agree. I told them to kill us all and have done with it, and to forget about meeting Mother Superior. They did not accept this until they ran out of hostages. You shared them all? Tamerlane asked. Yes, that would be Tam's concern as she neared her own death. While pretending to assure myself they were dead. You may as well know the whole thing. These women are grotesque. They possess caged futars. The bodies of my sisters were thrown into the cages where the futars ate them. The Spider Queen, appropriate name, made me watch this. Disgusting, Belanda said. Dortwyler sighed. They did not know, naturally, that I have worse visions in other memory. They sought to overwhelm your sensibilities, Odraid said. Foolish. Were they surprised when you didn't react as they wished? Chagrined, I would say. I think they had seen others react as I did. I told them it was as good a way as any to get fertilizer. I believe that angered them. Cannibalism, Tamerlane muttered. Only in appearance, Dortwyler said. Futars definitely are not human. Barely tamed wild animals. No handlers? Odraid asked. I saw none. The Futars did speak. They said, eat, before they ate. And they jibed at honored maters around them. You hungry? That sort of thing. More important was what happened after they ate. Dortwyler lapsed into a fit of coughing. They tried poisons, she said. Stupid women. When she regained her breath, Dortwyler said, A futar came to the bars of its cage after their banquet. It looked at the Spider Queen, and it screamed. I have never heard such a sound. Chilling. Every honored mater in that room froze, and I swear to you, they were terrified. Shiana touched Dortwyler's arm. A predator immobilizing its prey. Undoubtedly, it had qualities of voice. The Futars appeared surprised that it did not freeze me. The Honored Mater's reaction? Belanda asked. Yes, a Mentat would require that datum. A general clamor when they found their voices. Many shouted for great Honored Mater to destroy the Futars. She, however, took a calmer view. Too valuable alive, she said. A hopeful sign, Tamerlane said. Odraid looked at Belanda. I will order Stragi to bring the Bashar here. Objections? Belanda gave a curt nod. They knew the gamble must be taken, despite questions about Teg's intentions. To Dortwyler, Odraid said, I want you in my own guest quarters. We'll bring in Sooks. Order what you need and prepare for a full council meeting. You are a special advisor. Dortwyler spoke while struggling to her feet. I've not slept in almost 15 days, and I will need a special meal. Shiana, see to that, and get the Sooks up here. Tam, stay with the Bashar and Stregi. Regular reports. He'll want to go to the cantonment and take personal charge. Get him a comm link with Duncan. Nothing must impede them. You want me here with him? Tamerlane asked. You are his leech. Stragi takes him nowhere without your knowledge. He wants Duncan as weapons master. Make sure he accepts Duncan's confinement in the ship. Bell, any weapons data Duncan requires, priority. Comments? There were no comments. Thoughts about consequences, yes, but the decisiveness of Odraid's behavior infected them. Sitting back, Odraid closed her eyes and waited until silence told her she was alone. The Komais were still watching, of course. They know I'm tired, Who wouldn't be under these circumstances? 3 more sisters killed by those monsters. Bashar. They must feel our lash and know the lesson. When she heard Stragi arrive with Teg, Odraid opened her eyes. Stragi led him in by the hand, but there was something about them saying this was not an adult guiding a child. Teg's movement said he gave Stragi permission to treat him this way. She would have to be warned. Tam followed and went to a chair near the windows directly beneath the bust of Chenue. Significant positioning. Tam did strange things lately. Do you wish me to stay, Mother Superior? Stragi released Teg's hand and stood near the door. Sit over there beside Tam. Listen and do not interrupt. You must know what will be required of you. Teg hitched himself onto the chair recently occupied by Dortwyla. I suppose this is a council of war. There's an adult behind the childish voice. I won't ask your plan yet, Odraid said. Good. The unexpected takes more time, and I may not be able to tell you what I intend until the moment of action. We've been observing you with Duncan. Why are you interested in ships from the scattering? Long-haul ships have a distinctive appearance. I saw them on the flat at Gamu. Teg sat back and let this sink in, glad of the briskness he sensed in Odraid's manner. Decisions. No long deliberations. That suited his needs. They must not learn the full extent of my abilities. Not yet. You would disguise an attack force? Alanda came through the door as Odraid was speaking, and growled an objection while sitting. Impossible! They'll have recognition codes and secret signals for... Let me decide that, Bell, or remove me from command. This is the Council, Blonda said. You don't... Mentat? He looked fully at her, the Bashar parent in his gaze. When she fell silent, he said, Don't question my loyalty. If you would weaken me, replace me. Let him have his say. That was Tam. This isn't the first council where the Bashar has appeared as our equal. Belanda lowered her chin a fractional millimeter. To Odraid, Teg said, Avoiding warfare is a matter of intelligence, the gathered variety, and intellectual power. Throwing our own cant at us. She heard Mentat in his voice. And Belanda obviously heard this as well. Intelligence and intelligence, the doubled view. Without it, warfare often occurred as an accident. The Bashar sat silently, letting them stew in their own historical observations. The urge to conflict went far deeper than consciousness. The tyrant had been right. Humankind acted as one beast. The forces impelling that great collective animal went back to tribal days and beyond, as did so many forces to which humans responded without thinking. Mix the genes. Expand Lebensraum for your own breeders. Gather the energies of others. Collect slaves, peons, servants, serfs, markets, workers. The terms often were interchangeable. Odraid saw what he was doing. Knowledge absorbed from the Sisterhood helped make him the incomparable Mentat Bashar. He held these things as instincts. Energy-eating drove war's violence. This was described as greed, fear, that others will take your hoard, power hunger, and on into futile analyses. Odraid had heard these even from Belanda, who obviously was not taking it well that a subordinate should remind them of what they already knew. The tyrant knew, Teg said. Duncan quotes him. War is behavior with roots in the single cell of the primeval seas. Eat whatever you touch, or it will eat you. What do you propose? Belanda, at her most snappish. A feint at Gamu, then strike their base on Junction. For that, we need first-hand observations. He stared steadily at Odraid. He knows. The thought flared in Odrade's mind.
You think your studies of Junction, when it was a guild base, are still accurate?
Belanda demanded. They haven't had time to change the place, much from what I stored here. He tapped his forehead in an odd parody of the Sisterhood's gesture.
Englobement, Odrade said.
Belanda looked at her sharply.
The cost!
Losing everything is more costly, Take said. Fold space sensors don't have to be large, Odrade said.
Duncan would set them to create a Holzman explosion on contact.
The explosions would be visible and would give us a trajectory. He sat back and looked at an indefinite area on Odrade's rear wall. Would they accept it? He dared not frighten them with another display of wild talent. If Bell knew he could see the no-ships.
Do it, Odrade said.
You have the command. Use it. There was a distinct sense of chuckling from Terraza in other memories. Give him his head. That's how I got such a great reputation.
One thing, Belanda said. She looked at Odrade. You're going to be a spy?
Who else can get in there and transmit observations?
They'll be monitoring every means of transmission.
Even the one that tells our waiting no-ship we have not been betrayed? Odrade asked.
An encrypted message hidden in the transmission, Take said. Duncan has devised an encryption that would take months to break, but we doubt they'll detect its presence.
Madness, Belanda muttered. I met an honored mater military commander on Gamu, Take said. Slack when it came to necessary details. I think they're overconfident.
Belanda stared at him, and there was the Bashar staring back at her out of a child's innocent eyes.
Abandon all sanity, ye who enter here, he said.
Get out of here, all of you, Odrade ordered. You have work to do, and Miles.
He already had slid off the chair, but he stood there looking much as he always had when waiting for Mother to tell him something important.
Did you refer to the lunacy of dramatic events that warfare always amplifies?
What else? Surely you didn't think I referred to your sisterhood.
Duncan plays this game sometimes.
I don't want us catching the honored mater madness, Tag said. It is contagious, you know.
They've tried to control the sex drive, Odrade said. That always gets away from you.
Runaway lunacy, he agreed. He leaned against the table, his chin barely above the surface.
Something drove those women back here. Duncan's right. They're looking for something and running away at the same time.
You have 90 standard days to get ready, she said. Not one day more.
Ishyara al-Adab Hadbatu. A hunchback does not see his own hunch. Folk saying. Bene Gesserit commentary. The hunch may be seen with the aid of mirrors, but mirrors may show the whole being. The Bashar Teg. It was a weakness in the Bene Gesserit that Odrade knew the entire sisterhood soon must recognize. She gained no consolation from having seen it first. Denying our deepest resource when we need it most. The scutterings had gone beyond the ability of humans to assemble the experiences in manageable form. We can only extract essentials, and that is a matter of judgment. Vital data would remain dormant in great and small events, accumulations called instinct. So that was it finally. They must fall back on unspoken knowledge. In this age, the word refugees took on the color of its pre-space meaning. Small bands of reverend mothers sent out by the sisterhood held something in common with old scenes of displaced stragglers trudging down forgotten roads. Pitiful belongings bound in bits of cloth, wheeled on decrepit prams and toy wagons, or piled atop lopsided vehicles, remnant humanity clinging to the outsides and densely packed within.
every face blank with despair or heated by desperation. So we repeat history and repeat it and repeat it. As she entered a tube slot shortly before lunch, Audrey's thoughts clung to her scattered sisters. Political refugees, economic refugees, free battle refugees. Is this your golden path, tyrant? Visions of her scattered ones haunted Audrey as she entered Central's reserve dining room, a place only reverend mothers might enter. They serve themselves here at cafeteria lines. It had been 20 days since she had released Tag to the cantonment. Rumors were flying in Central, especially among proctors, although there still was no sign of another vote. New decisions must be announced today, and they would have to be more than naming the ones who would accompany her to Junction. She glanced around the dining room, an austere place of yellow walls, low ceiling, small square tables that could be latched in rows for larger groups. Windows along one side revealed a garden court under translucent cover. Dwarf apricots and green fruit, lawn, benches, small tables. Sisters ate outside when sunlight poured into the enclosed yard. No sunlight today. She ignored a cafeteria line where a place was being made for her. Later, sisters. At the corner table near the windows reserved for her, she deliberately moved the chairs. Belle's brown chair dog pulsed faintly at this unaccustomed disturbance. Audrey sat with her back to the room, knowing this would be interpreted correctly. Leave me to my own thoughts. While she waited, she stared out at the courtyard. An enclosing hedge of exotic purple-leaved shrubs was in red flower. Giant blossoms with delicate stamens of deep yellow. Belanda arrived first, dropping into her chair dog with no comment on its new position. Belle frequently appeared untidy, belt loose, robe wrinkled, bits of food on the bosom. Today she was neat and clean. Now why is that? Belanda said, Tam and Shiana will be late. Audrey accepted this without stopping her study of this different Belanda. Was she a bit slimmer? There was no way to insulate a mother superior completely from what went on within her sensory area of concerns, but sometimes pressures of work distracted her from small changes. These were a reverend mother's natural habitat, though, and negative evidence was as illuminating as positive. On reflection, Audrey realized that this new Belanda had been with them for several weeks. Something had happened to Belanda. Any reverend mother could exercise reasonable control over weight and figure. A matter of internal chemistry, banking fires or letting them burn high. For years now, rebellious Belanda had flaunted a gross body. You've lost weight, Audrey said. Fat was beginning to slow me too much. That had never been sufficient reason for Belle to change her ways. She had always compensated with speed of mind, with projections and faster transport. Duncan really got to you, didn't he? I'm not a hypocrite nor criminal. Time to send you to a punishment keep, I guess. This recurrent humorous thrust usually annoyed Belanda. Today it did not arouse her. But under pressure of Audrey's stare, she said, If you must know, it's Shiana. She has been after me to improve my appearance and broaden my circle of associates. Annoying. I'm doing it to shut her up. Why are Tam and Shiana late? Reviewing your latest meeting with Duncan. I am severely limited who has access to it. No telling what will happen when it becomes general knowledge. As it will. Inevitable. I only buy us time to prepare. I did not want it suppressed, Belle. Dar, what are you doing? I will announce that at a convocation. No words, but Belanda glared her surprise. A convocation is my rights, Audrey said. Alanda leaned back and stared at Odred, assessing, questioning, all without words. The last convocation of the Bene Gesserit had been at the tyrant's death, and before that, the tyrant's seizure of power. A convocation had not been thought possible since Honored Mater's attack. Too much time taken from desperate labors. Presently, Balanda asked, "Will you risk bringing sisters from our surviving keeps?"
"No.
Dortuaila will represent them. There is precedent, as you know. First you free Mirbella. Now it's a convocation."
"Free?"
"Mirbella is tied by chains of gold. Where would she go without her Duncan?"
"But you've given Duncan freedom to leave the ship."
"Has he?" Balanda said. "You think that information from the ship's armory is all he'll take?"
"I know it."
"I am reminded of Jessica turning her back on the Mentat, who would have killed her. The Mentat was immobilized by his own beliefs. Sometimes the bull gores the matador, Dar. More often he does not. Our survival should not depend on statistics."
"Agreed.
That is why I call convocation. Acolytes included.
Everyone.
Even Mirbella? Does she get an acolyte's vote?"
"I think she may be a reverend mother by then."
Balanda gasped. Then, "You move too fast, Dar."
"These times require it."
Balanda glanced toward the dining room door. "Here's Tam. Later than I expected. I wonder if they took time to consult Mirbella." Tamerlane arrived, breathing hard from hurrying. She dropped into her blue chair dog, noted the new positions, and said,
"Shiana will be along presently. She is showing records to Mirbella."
Balanda addressed Tamerlane. "She's going to put Mirbella through the agony and call a convocation."
"I'm not surprised."
Tamerlane spoke with her old precision. "The position of that honored mater must be resolved as soon as possible." Shiana joined them then and took the sling chair at Odred's left, speaking as she sat. "Have you watched Mirbella walk?" Odred was caught by the way this abrupt question, uttered without preamble, fixed the attention. "Mirbella walking in the ship. Observed just that morning. Beauty in Mirbella, and the eye could not avoid it. To other Bene Gesserit, reverend mothers and acolytes alike, she was something of an exotic. She had arrived full-grown from the dangerous outside. One of them. It was her movements, though, that compelled the eye. Homeostasis in her that went beyond the norms." Shiana's question redirected the observer's mind. Something about Mirbella's quite acceptable passage required new examination. What was it? Mirbella's motions were always carefully chosen. She excluded anything not required to go from here to there. Path of least resistance. It was a view of Mirbella that sent a pang through Odred. Shiana had seen it, of course. Was Mirbella one of those who would choose an easy way every time? Odred could see that question on the faces of her companions. "The agony will sort it out," Tamerlane said. Odred looked squarely at Shiana. "Well?" She had asked the question after all.
"Perhaps it's only that she does not waste energy. But I agree with Tam. The agony."
"Are we making a terrible mistake?" Balanda asked. Something in the way this question was asked told Odred that Bell had made a Mentat summation.
"She has seen what I intend."
"If you know a better course, reveal it now," Odred said. "Or hold your peace." Silence gripped them. Odred looked at her companions in succession, lingering on Bell.
"Help us, whatever gods there may be, and I, being Bene Gesserit,
am too much agnostic to make that plea with anything more than a hope of covering all possibilities. Don't reveal it, Belle. If you know what I will do, you know it must be seen in its own time. Alanda brought Odred out of reverie with a cough. Are we going to eat or talk? People are staring. Should we have another go at Saitali? Shiana asked. Was that an attempt to divert my attention? Belanda said, Give him nothing. He's in reserve. Let him sweat. Odred looked carefully at Belanda. She was fuming over the silence imposed on her by Odred's secret decision, avoiding a meeting of eyes with Shiana. Jealous. Belle is jealous of Shiana. Tamerlane said, I'm only an advisor now, but... Stop that, Tam, Odred snapped. Tam and I have been discussing that Gola, Belanda said. Idaho was that Gola when Belanda had something disparaging to say. Why did he think he needed to talk secretly to Shiana? A hard stare at Shiana. Odred saw shared suspicion. She does not accept the explanation. Does she reject Duncan's emotional bias? Shiana spoke quickly. Mother Superior explained that. Emotion, Belanda sneered. Odred raised her voice and was surprised at this reaction. Suppressing emotions is a weakness. Tamerlane's shaggy eyebrows lifted. Shiana intruded. If we won't bend, we can break. Before Belanda could respond, Odred said, Ice can be chipped apart or melted. Ice maidens are vulnerable to a single form of attack. I'm hungry, Shiana said. Peacemaking? Not a role expected of the mouse. Tamerlane stood. Bulabase, we must eat the fish before our sea is gone. Not enough null entropy storage. In the softest of simulflows, Odred noted the departure of her companions to the cafeteria line. Tamerlane's accusatory words recalled that second day with Shiana, after the decision to phase out the Great Sea. Standing at Shiana's window in the early morning, Odred had watched a seabird move against the desert background. It winged its way northward, a creature completely out of place in that setting, but beautiful in a profoundly nostalgic way because of it. White wings glistened in early sunlight, a touch of black beneath and in front of its eyes. Abruptly it hovered, wings motionless. Then, lifting on an air current, it tucked its wings like a hawk and plummeted out of view behind the farther buildings. Reappearing, it carried something in its beak, a morsel it swallowed on the wing. A seed bird alone and adapting. We adapt. We do indeed adapt. It was not a quiet thought, nothing to induce repose. Shocking, rather. Odred had felt jarred out of a dangerously drifting course. Not only her beloved chapter house, but their entire human universe was breaking out of its old shapes and taking on new forms. Perhaps it was right in this new universe that Shiana continued to conceal things from Mother Superior. And she is concealing something. Once more, Belanda's acidic tones brought Odred to full awareness of her surroundings. If you won't serve yourself, I suppose we must take care of you. Belanda placed a bowl of aromatic fish stew in front of Odred, a great chunk of garlic bread beside it. When each had sampled the bouillabaisse, Belanda put down her spoon and stared hard at Odred. You're not going to suggest we love one another, or some such debilitating nonsense. Thank you for bringing my food, Odred said. Shiana swallowed, and a wide grin came over her features. It's delicious. Belanda returned to eating. It's all right. but she had heard the unspoken comment. Tamerlane ate steadily, shifting attention from Shiana to Belanda, and then to Odred. Tam appeared to agree with the proposed softening of emotional strictures. At least she voiced no objections, and older sisters were most likely to object. The love the Bene Gesserit tried to deny was everywhere, Odred thought, in small things and big. How many ways were there to prepare delectable, life-sustaining foods, recipes that really were embodiments of loves old and new? This bouillabaisse so smoothly restorative on her tongue, its origins were planted deeply in love. The wife at home using that part of the day's catch her husband could not sell. The very essence of the Bene Gesserit was concealed in loves. Why else minister to those unspoken needs humanity always carried? Why else work for the perfectibility of humankind? Bowl empty, Belanda put down her spoon and wiped up the dregs with the last of her bread. She swallowed, looking pensive. Love weakens us, she said, no force in her voice. An acolyte could have said it no differently. Right out of the coda. Odred concealed amusement and countered with another coda's stepping stone. Beware jargon. It usually hides ignorance and carries little knowledge. Respectful wariness entered Belanda's eyes. Shiana pushed herself back from the table and wiped her mouth with her napkin. Tamerlane did the same. Her chair dog adjusted as she leaned back, eyes bright and amused. Tam knows. The wily old witch is still wise in my ways. But Shiana, what game is Shiana playing? I would almost say she hopes to distract me, to keep my attention away from her. She is very good at it. Learned it at my knee. Well, two can play that game. I press Belanda, but watch my little dune wave. What price respectability, Belle? Odred asked. Belanda accepted this thrust in silence. Hidden in Bene Gesserit jargon was a definition of respectability, and they all knew it. Should we honor the memory of the Lady Jessica for her humanity? Odred asked. Shiana is surprised. Jessica put the sisterhood in jeopardy, Belanda accuses. To thine own sisters be true, Tamerlane murmured. Our antique definition of respectability helps keep us human, Odred said. Hear me well, Shiana. Her voice, little more than a whisper, Shiana said, if we lose that, we lose it all. Odred suppressed a sigh. So that's it. Shiana met her gaze. You are instructing us, of course. Twilight thoughts, Belanda muttered. Best we avoid them. Terrazza called us Latter-day Bene Gesserit, Shiana said. Odred's mood went self-accusatory. The bane of our present existence. Sinister imaginings can destroy us. How easy it was to conjure a future that looked at them from blazing orange eyes of berserk honored maters. Fears out of many pasts crouched within Odred, breathless moments focused on fangs that went with such eyes. Odred forced her attention back to the immediate problem. Who will accompany me to Junction? They knew Dortwyla's harrowing experience, and word of it had spread throughout Chapter House. Whoever goes with Mother Superior could well be fed to futars. Tam, Odred said. You and Dortwyla. And that may be a death sentence. The next step is obvious. Shiana, Odred said, you will share with Tam. Dortwyla and I will share with Belle. And I also will share with you before I go. Belanda was aghast. Mother Superior.
I am not suited to take your place.
Odraid held her attention on Shiana. That is not being suggested. I will merely make you the repository of my lives. Definite fear on Shiana's face, but she dared not refuse a direct order. Odraid nodded to Tamerlane. I will share later. You and Shiana will do it now. Tamerlane leaned toward Shiana. The strictures of great age and imminent death made this a welcome thing for her. But Shiana involuntarily pulled away.
Now, Odraid said.
Let Tam judge whatever it is you hide. There was no escape. Shiana bent her head to Tamlane's until they touched. The flash of the exchange was electric, and the entire dining room felt it. Conversation stopped. Every gaze turned toward the table by the window. There were tears in Shiana's eyes when she withdrew. Tamlane smiled and made a gentle caressing motion with both hands along Shiana's cheeks. It's all right, dear. We all have these fears, and sometimes do foolish things because of them. But I am pleased to call you sister. Tell us, Tam.
No.
Tamerlane did not choose to do that. She faced Odraid and said, We must cling to our humanity at any cost. Your lesson is well received, and you have taught Shiana well. When Shiana shares with you, Dar, Balanta began, could you not reduce the influence she has on Idaho? I will not weaken a possible Mother Superior, Odraid said. Thank you, Tam. I think we will make our venture to Junction without excess baggage. Now, I want to report by tonight on Teg's progress. His leech has been too long away from him.
Will he learn that he has two leeches now? Shiana asked. Such joy in her.
Odraid stood. If Tam accepts her, then I must. Tam would never betray our sisterhood. And Shiana, of us all, Shiana most reveals the natural traits from our human roots. Still, I wish she had never created that statue she calls the Void.
Religion must be accepted as a source of energy. It can be directed for our purposes, but only within limits that experience reveals. Here is the secret meaning of free will. Missionaria Protectiva, primary teaching. A thick cloud cover had moved over Central this morning, and Odraid's workroom took on a gray silence to which she felt herself responding with inner stillness, as though she dared not move because that disturbed dangerous forces. Mirbella's day of agony, she thought. I must not think of omens. Weather had issued a peremptory warning about clouds. They were an accidental displacement. Corrective measures were being taken, but would require time. Meanwhile, expect high winds, and there could be precipitation. Shiana and Tamerlane stood at the window looking at this poorly controlled weather. Their shoulders touched. Odraid watched them from her chair behind the table. Those two had become like a single person since yesterday's sharing. Not an unexpected occurrence. Precedents were known, although not many of them. Exchanges occurring in the presence of poisonous spice essence, or at an actual moment of death, did not often allow further living contact between participants. It was interesting to observe. The two backs were oddly alike in their rigidity. The force of extremis that made sharing possible dictated powerful changes in personality, and Odraid knew this with an intimacy that compelled tolerance. Whatever it was Shiana concealed, Tam also concealed. Something tied to Shiana's basic humanity. And Tam could be trusted. Until another sister shared with one of them, Tam's judgment must be accepted.
Not that watchdogs would cease probing and observing minutiae, but they needed no new crisis just now.
This is Mirbella's day, Odrade said.
The odds are long she won't survive, Alanda said, hunched forward in her chair dog. What happens to our precious plan then?
Our plan.
Extremis, Odrade said. In that context, it was a word with several meanings. Balanda interpreted it as a possibility of acquiring Mirbella's persona memories at the moment of her death. Then we must not permit Idaho to observe. My order stands, Odrade said. It's Mirbella's wish, and I've given my word.
Mistake, mistake, Balanda muttered.
Odrade knew the source of Balanda's doubts, visible to all of them. Somewhere in Mirbella lay something extremely painful. It caused her to shy away from certain questions like an animal confronted by a predator. Whatever it was, the thing went deep. Hypnotrance induction might not explain it. All right, Odrade spoke loudly to emphasize it was for all of her listeners. It's not the way we've ever done it before. But we cannot take Duncan from the ship, so we must go to him. He will be present. Balanda was still well and truly shocked. No man, barring the damned Kwisatz Haderach himself and his tyrant son, had ever known the particulars of this Bene Gesserit secret. Both of those monsters had felt the agony. Two disasters. No matter that the tyrant's agony had worked its way inward a cell at a time to transform him into a sandworm symbiote. No more original worm, no more original human. And Moabdib? He dared the agony, and look what came of that. Shiana turned from the window and took one step toward the table, giving Odrade the curious feeling that the two women standing there had become a Janus figure, back to back, but only one persona.
Bell is confused by your promise, Shiana said.
How soft her voice. He could be the catalyst to pull Mirbella through, Odrade said. You tend to underestimate the power of love.
No, Tamlane spoke to the window in front of her. We fear its power.
Could be. Bell still was scornful, but that came naturally to her. The expression on her face said she remained implacably stubborn.
Hubris, Shiana murmured.
What? Balanda whirled in her chair dog, causing it to squeak with indignation.
We share a common failing with Saitali, Shiana said.
Oh? Balanda was gnawing at Shiana's secret.
We think we make history, Shiana said.
She returned to her position beside Tamerlane, both of them staring out the window. Balanda returned her attention to Odrade.
Do you understand that?
Odrade ignored her. Let the Mentat work it out for herself. The projector on the work table clicked, and a message was displayed. Odrade reported it. Still not ready at the ship. She looked at those two rigid backs in front of the window. History. On Chapter House, there had been little of what Odrade liked to think of as history-making before the Honored Maters. Only the steady graduation of Reverend Mothers passing through the agony. Like a river. It flowed, and it went somewhere. You could stand on the bank, as Odrade sometimes thought they did here, and you could observe the flow. A map might tell you where the river went, but no map could reveal more essential things. A map could never show intimate movements of the river's cargo. Where did they go? Maps had limited value in this age. A printout or a projection from archives, that was not the map they required. There had to be a better one somewhere, one attached to all of those lives. You could carry that map in your memory and have it out occasionally for a closer look.
Whatever happened to the Reverend Mother Parenti we sent out last year? The map in the mind would take over and create a Parenti scenario. It was really yourself on the river, of course, but this made little difference. It still was the map they needed. We don't like it that we're caught in someone else's currents, that we don't know what may be revealed at the river's next bend. We always prefer overflight, even though any commanding position must remain part of other currents. Every flow contains unpredictable things. Odraid looked up to see her three companions watching her. Tamerlane and Shiana had turned their backs to the window. Honored maters have forgotten that clinging to any form of conservatism can be dangerous, Odraid said. Have we forgotten it as well? They continued to stare at her, but they had heard. Become too conservative, and you were unprepared for surprises. That was what Moab Deeb had taught them, and his tyrant son had made the lesson forever unforgettable. Valanda's glum expression did not change. In the deep recesses of Odraid's consciousness, Taraza whispered, "Careful, Dar. I was lucky. Quick to grab advantage, just as you are. But you cannot depend on luck, and that is what bothers them. Don't even expect luck. Much better to trust your water images. Let Belle have her say." "Belle," Odraid said, "I thought you accepted Duncan." "Within limits." "Definitely accusatory." "I think we should go out to the ship," Shiana spoke with demanding emphasis. "This is not the place to wait. Do we fear what she may become?" Tam and Shiana turned toward the door simultaneously, as though the same puppet master controlled their strings. Odraid found the interruption welcome. Shiana's question alarmed them. "What could Mirbella become?" "A catalyst, my sisters. A catalyst." The wind shook them when they emerged from Central, and for once Odraid was thankful for tube transport. Walking could await warmer temperatures without this blustering mini-tempest tugging at their robes. When they were seated in a private car, Belanda once more took up her accusatory refrain. "Everything he does could be camouflage." Once more, Odraid voiced the oft-repeated Bene Gesserit warning to limit their reliance on Mentats. "Logic is blind, and often knows only its own past." Tamerlane chimed in with unexpected support. "You are getting paranoid, Belle." Shiana spoke more softly. "I've heard you say, Belle, that logic is good for playing pyramid chess, but often too slow for needs of survival." Alanda sat in glowering silence, only a faint hissing rumble of their tube passage intruding on the quiet. "Wounds must not be taken into the ship." Odraid matched her tone to Shiana's. "Belle, dear Belle. We do not have time to consider all ramifications of our plight. We no longer can say, if this happens, then that must surely follow. And in such a case, our moves must be so and so and so." Melanda actually chuckled. "Oh, my. The ordinary mind is such a clutter. And I must not demand what we all need and cannot have. Sufficient time for every plan." It was Belanda Mentat speaking, telling them she knew she was flawed by pride in her ordinary mind. What a badly organized, untidy place that was. Imagine what the non-Mentat puts up with, imposing so little order. She reached across the aisle and patted Odraid's shoulder. "It's all right, Dar. I'll behave." What would an outsider think, seeing that exchange? Odraid wondered. All four of them acting in concert for the needs of one sister. For the needs of Mirbella's agony as well.
People saw only the outside of this Reverend Mother mask they wore. When we must, which is most of the time these days, we function at astonishing levels of competence. No pride in that, a simple fact. But let us relax, and we hear gibberish at the edges as ordinary folk do. Ours merely has more volume. We live our lives in little congeries like anyone else. Rooms of the mind, rooms of the body. Melinda had composed herself, hands clasped in her lap. She knew what Odrade planned and kept it to herself. It was a trust that went beyond Mentat projection into something more basically human. Projection was a marvelously adaptable tool, but a tool nonetheless. Ultimately, all tools depended on the ones who used them. Odrade was at a loss how to show her thanks without reducing trust. I must walk my tightrope in silence. She sensed the chasm beneath her, the nightmare image conjured by these reflections. The unseen hunter with an axe was closer. Odrade wanted to turn and identify the stalker, but resisted. I will not make Moabdeeb's mistake. The prescient warning she had first sensed on Dune in the ruins of C.H. Tabor would not be exercised until she ended or the Sisterhood ended. Did I create this terrible threat by my fears? Surely not. Still, she felt she had stared at time in that ancient Fremen stronghold, as though all past and all future were frozen into a tableau that could not be changed. I must break free of you utterly, Moabdeeb. Their arrival at the landing flat pulled her from these fearful musings. Mirbella waited in rooms Proctors had prepared. At the center was a small amphitheater, about 7 meters along its enclosing back wall. Padded benches were stepped upward in a steep arc, seating for no more than 20 observers. Proctors had left her without explanation on the lowest bench, staring at a suspensor buoyed table. Straps hung over the sides to confine whoever lay on it. Me. An astonishing series of rooms, she thought. She had never before been permitted into this part of the ship. She felt exposed here, even more so than she had under open sky. The smaller rooms through which they had brought her to this amphitheater were clearly designed for medical emergencies, resuscitation equipment, sanitary odors, antiseptics. Her removal to this room had been peremptory. None of her questions answered. Proctors had taken her from an advanced acolyte class in Prana Bindu exercises. They said only, Mother Superior's orders. The quality of her guardian proctors told her much, gentle but firm. They were here to prevent flight, and to make sure she went where ordered. I won't try to escape. Where was Duncan? Odrade had promised he would be with her for the agony. Did his absence mean this was not to be her ultimate trial? Or had they concealed him behind some secret wall through which he could see and not be seen? I want him at my side. Didn't they know how to rule her? Certainly they did. Threaten to deprive me of this man. That's all it takes to hold me and satisfy me. Satisfy. What a useless word. Complete me. That's better. I am less when we're apart. He knows it too, damn him. Mirbella smiled. How does he know it? Because he is completed in the same way. How could this be love? She felt no weakening from the tugs of desire. Bene Gesserit and honored maters alike said love weakened. She felt strengthened by Duncan. Even his small attentions were strengthening. When he brought her a steaming cup of stim tea in the morning, it was better coming from his hands. Perhaps we have something more than love. Odrade and companions entered the amphitheater at the uppermost tier and stood a moment looking down at the figures seated below them.
Mirbella wore the white-trimmed long robe of a senior acolyte. She sat with elbow on knee, chin resting on fist, her attention concentrated on the table. She knows. "Where is Duncan?" Odred asked. At her words, Mirbella stood and turned. The question confirmed what she had suspected. "I'll find out," Shiana said, and left them. Mirbella waited in silence, matching Odred stare for stare. "We must have her," Odred thought. Never had the Bene Gesserit need been greater. What an insignificant figure Mirbella was down there, to carry so much in her person. The almost oval face, with its widening at the brows, revealed new Bene Gesserit composure. Widely set green eyes, arched brows, no squinting, no more orange. Small mouth, no more pouting. She is ready. Shiana returned with Duncan at her side. Odred spared him a brief glance. Nervous. So Shiana had told him. Good. That was an act of friendship. He might need friends here. "You will sit up here and remain here unless I call you," Odred said. "Stay with him, Shiana." Without being told, Tamerlane flanked Duncan, one of them on each side. At a gentle gesture from Shiana, they sat. Balanda beside her, Odred descended to Mirbella's level and went to the table. Oral syringes on the far side were ready to lift into position, but remained empty. Odred gestured at the syringes and nodded to Balanda, who went out a side door in search of the Sook Reverend Mother in charge of spice essence.